Okay, so first, I want to wish everyone a Gemar Tov, even after Yom Kippur. We wish people a Gemar Tov, that the Yom Kippur day should have been successful for all of us, that Hashem accepted our tshuva. And of course, we know that even after Yom Kippur, where the judgment is sealed, it is not delivered to the emissaries to be carried out until Hoshana Rabbah. So one still has a chance to do tshuva. And again, I appreciate the turnout today. I wasn't even sure there was going to be a shir. I was debating whether to come in at all, but I see I would have kept a lot of people waiting. Well, today we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming holiday of Sukkos. And the thought that I want to bring out is that the Torah says in Parshas Emor and Chumash Vayikra, that the reason why we have a sukkah is ki basukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael, because through sukkos I placed the Jewish people when I took them out of the land of Egypt. Now there's a machlokes in Gemara itself between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. What is the meaning of the sukkos that God gave us when we left Egypt, that we are commemorating by building our sukkah? We know what our sukkah is, but what is the sukkah that we are commemorating? According to Rabbi Akiva, it quite literally means the temporary booths or huts that we had when we left Mitzrayim, obviously as we're wandering through the desert. Now it's interesting, we normally define that we stayed in tents, but apparently the concept would be we had makeshift huts that were covered with vegetation. And therefore, it is a memory, it is a commemoration of the hut that we had, not only when we left Mitzrayim, but in reality, throughout the 40 years of wandering in the desert. This is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is that the sukkah that the Torah is referring to are the ananei hakavod. They are the clouds of divine glory that surrounded us when we left Mitzrayim. And we built a hut that surrounds us to commemorate and to think about the Zecher Li'ananei HaKavod, right? So Rabbi Akiva says, Sukkos Mamish. And Rabbi Eliezer says, it is Zecher Li'ananei HaKavod. It's interesting that the Mabit, Rav Moshe ben Yosef Trani, who was a contemporary of Rav Yosef Cairo, raises an interesting question. The Gemara in Tainus tells us that there were three miracles in the desert that came through three of our great leaders. The man fell in the zechus of Moshe Rabbeinu. The well, the traveling well of water, came in the merit of Miriam Hanaviyah, and that's why when Miriam died, we no longer had that well, and that is when Moshe Rabbeinu had to hit the rock, which of course had disastrous consequences. And the Ananei HaKavod, the clouds of glory, came in the merit of Aaron. So we have the Man, we have the Be'er, we have the Ananei HaKavod. Of those three miracles, Mabit points out, we only observe a holiday for one of them. We don't have a holiday for Man, unless you're going to say Monday is day of Man. We don't have a holiday for the Be'er, but we only have a holiday for the Ananei HaKavod. The Mabit says, why should it be that Aaron's miracle is given more prominence and commemoration than the miracle that was done in the merit of Moshe and Miriam? And the Mabit gives three answers why we only make a Zecher Le'Ananei HaKavod and we don't make a Zecher Le'Man. Answer number one is that the Man and the Be'er came through Machlokas. We complained. We argued with Moshe. We rebelled against Moshe. We said, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim to die in the desert? So even though these are great miracles, the Man and the Be'er are tremendous miracles, but since they came through machlokes, they came through rebellion, they came through ingratitude, we don't want to commemorate them. By contrast, the Anane HaKavod did not come through Machlokas. They were simply a gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us when we left Mitzrayim. So we commemorate that gift because that gift has no Sheikhas to Machlokas. That's answer number one. Answer number two is the man, which is basic food, and the be'er, which is water, are necessities of life. We would die without them. We would die without food. We would die without water. As a result, in a sense, they don't show Hashem's love to the same way. For example, even somebody you don't like, again, putting aside the halachic issue, who are you allowed to not like them? But somebody you don't like, you know, you're not going to invite them into your house for a Sheva Brachos or a Shabbos meal or even a Pesach Seder. But if you see them starving in the street, you will certainly give them something to eat so they shouldn't die. So in a sense, when God gives us things that are so important that without them, we would die, of course, he will give them to us and we have to be grateful. But the gratitude is not so great in a sense, because that does not show God's love for us. The Anane HaKavod was frosting on the cake. The Anane HaKavod, in a sense, is less important than the man and the be'er. But the very fact that it is less important shows that it's more of an act of love. And therefore, we commemorate the tremendous divine love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us through the Anane HaKavod. Right, so answer number one is, man and be'er come through machlokes. The Anane HaKavod do not come through machlokes. Answer number two is, the man and the be'er are necessities and do not demonstrate divine love. The Anane HaKavod is not a necessity. And therefore, it demonstrates divine love. And then the Mabit gives answer number three. And answer number three is, the man and the be'er are past events. Yes, of course, Hashem still gives us food and water, but the particular miracles of the man and the be'er are events of the past. We do not relive them. By contrast, the Mabit says, and this is quite an amazing thought, the Anane HaKavod, which represents Hashem's protection of us, Hashem's nurturing of us, we actually experience on Sukkos. Even if we don't see the Anane HaKavod, we are in fact enveloped with that special and loving divine presence. So the Mabit's third answer is that Man and Be'er are events of the past. Anane HaKavod are realities of the present. Now it's interesting, this may be an explanation why Sukkos, even more than some than the other Yom Tovim, there's a tremendous emphasis on the unity and togetherness of Am Yisrael, the Achdus and the Shalom of Am Yisrael. We see this both in terms of the Sukkah and in terms of the Lulav and the Esrog. Now, the Lulav and the Esrog is the more famous association. I'm sure all of you know the Medrash, the very well-known Medrash. I'll just repeat it just to be sure that it's in everybody's consciousness, that the four species that we take correspond to the four different types of Jews. The Esrog, that has a pleasant fragrance that represents good deeds and kindness, and has a good taste, if you've had Esrog jam, that represents Torah learning. So the Esrog, you might say, is the perfect tzaddik, who is great in his Torah learning and great in his good deeds. Then we have the lulav, which is a date palm. A date is a fruit with a good taste, but there's not really an aroma. That represents the person who is learned in Torah, who is not so great in his good deeds. Then you have the hadas, the myrtle, which does not have any fruit. So there's a good smell, which represents good deeds, but it does not have Torah learning. And then you have the lowly arava, the willow, which does not have a taste. So there's no Torah, and it does not have a smell. It does not have good deeds. So we have the four types of Jews, Torah and good deeds without Torah, Torah without good deeds, and the person that has nothing. And what do we do on Sukkot? We take everything together. We bind them together. If you have everything except the Arava, your whole Lulav and Esrog set are not kosher. Because there has to be an Achdus and a unity of Am Yisrael. Because only in that unity does the blessing of Hashem come. By the way, just as a little aside though, the Chavetz Chaim used to say an interesting words on this Medrash. He would point out that although when we do the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog, we take all four species, if you think about it, the Esrog is a little different than the other three. Because three of them, the Lulav, the Hadassim, and the Aravos, are bound together. The Esrog, you take out of your box, you connect it to the Dalet Minim, the other three when you do the mitzvah, and then you put the Esrog back into the box. So in a sense, the Esrog is a little separate from the other Minim. And the meaning of that is, the Chafetz Chaim used to say, is that the Tzaddik and the Talmud Chacham should always work with Klal Yisrael to encourage them in doing mitzvos and give them chizuk. But after the mitzvos are done, when everybody else is going to the movies or going to the mall, the Talmud Chacham Tzaddik needs to separate a little bit, meaning he should join with them for the good things that he can encourage them to do. But there also needs to be a certain degree of separation. And this is actually a very interesting point, because sometimes in the Kirov world, in the Jewish outreach world, there's an interesting controversy, you might say. There are some people in Jewish outreach that basically believe you got to do everything with your people, even if it's not necessarily halachic. So if they're going to a dance, you go to a dance with them. You wear a leather jacket, not that that's against halacha necessarily. You go to a discotheque, you go to a nightclub. There is a shita that in order to reach people, you have to kind of go down to their level, whatever they are doing. And again, I'm not opining one way or the other. I could see arguments on both sides of this. But the only observation I'm making is that I think the Chafetz Chaim would go with a different approach. The Chafetz Chaim would actually look at it in terms of the Etzrog, that the Etzrog connects to the other species when they are doing mitzvos, and then disengages to a certain degree. And by the way, it's not only in the world of Kiruv. This is also an issue of teachers and even parents, like how much do you do the stuff with your kids and how much do you need to kind of be a little bit removed as an authority figure or as someone that they'll respect and the like. For example, in a day school or a cheder, should the Rebbe play baseball with the kids? Again, I could see very strong arguments on both sides of the coin. And on one hand, playing with the kids creates a certain bond. On the other hand, perhaps it diminishes the status and the authority of the Rebbe as someone that's a little bit of above. So again, I'm not being machria. Just, I don't want to digress too much here. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky actually used to say that in Europe, a Rebbe would never play with the children. In America, perhaps it's necessary, and perhaps Israel might be the same way. But at least in America, Rabbi Yaakov said it was necessary for the kids to have that type of bond. Here in Eretz Yisrael, I think it might also be helpful, but the schools generally do not encourage that type of intimacy and that type of connection. Okay, but why am I bringing, I don't want to forget my main point. Why did I bring this in? Because I wanted to make the point that you see from the Lulav and the Esrog, the lesson of Achdus, Avas Yisrael, all Jews coming together. This is a very, very famous medrash. Now in truth, you actually see it from the holiday of Sukkot as a whole, even apart from Lulav and Esrog. The Torah brings a tradition that each of the Yomim Tovim is connected one of our Avos. That Pesach was given to Am Yisrael in the merit of Avraham. Shavuos was given to Am Yisrael in the merit of Yitzchak. And Sukkos was given to Am Yisrael in the merit of Yaakov. And that's why, by the way, the very first time that Sukkos is mentioned in the Torah is when Yaakov built huts for his animals, and he called the place Sukkos. And that's a remez that Sukkos came in the merit of Yaakov. So Sukkos is the holiday of Yaakov. Now Yaakov, among all of the Avos, signifies Achdus to the highest degree, because Avram had a Yitzchak and a Yishmael, and Yishmael was expelled. Yitzchak had a Yaakov and an Esav, and Esav too was disinherited from the Jewish people. So in Avraham's life and in Yitzchak's life, there is pirud, there is division, there is machlokas, there is divisiveness. Now Yaakov's children are not free of that, of course. We have Mechiras Yosef. But at least in terms of a nation, all of Yaakov's children are part of Klal Yisrael. And therefore Sukkos, even more than Pesach and Shavuos, is the holiday of Achdus. So we see it in Lulav and Esrog, and we see it in the very Chag of Sukkos. I should also mention that there's a part of Sukkos that even has Achdus to the Umot HaOlam. Right? Sukkos is so connected to Achdus that there's a unity and a commiseration with all of the nations of the world. Where do we see this? We see this from the 70 bulls that are brought on Sukkos as part of the Musafim. Over the 7 days of Sukkot, we bring bulls in descending order, day 1, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. This is the Musaf offering. These are burnt offerings on the Mizbeach. And Chazal remarked in Masechet Sukkah that the 70 bulls correspond to the 70 nations of the world, that on Sukkos we bring korbanos on their behalf, that God should bless them and give them prosperity. Ad kedei kach, that the Gemara says that if the nations of the world would know how much blessing the Jewish people brought to them through the korbanos of Sukkos, they never would have destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. It was actually against their self-interest to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And the truth of the matter is, this goes back to the blessing Hashem gave to Avram, when Hashem told Avram that those that bless your people will be blessed by God. So again, what have we seen? We've seen that Sukkos is connected to Achdus so far in 3 points: the Lulav and the Esrog, the holiday of Sukkos, Keneged Yaakov Avinu, the 70 Parim of Sukkos, and there's even a fourth way that Sukkos is connected to Achdus, because it is brought down that part of what Sukkah does is, Sukkah equalizes, in theory, the rich and the poor. Because when we live in homes, so some people have rich, wealthy, elaborate homes, and some people live in shacks. On Sukkos, although again, I understand some people have more beautiful Sukkos, but the essential idea of Sukkos is everybody is equally beloved. Everybody is the same in God's eyes. Rich and poor leave either their comfortable home or they leave their not comfortable home, and they dwell in a temporary hut. And that is also a great equalizer. So there are four ways that Sukkos corresponds to the idea of Achdus and unity. The Dalet Minim, the holiday of Sukkos connecting to Yaakov Avinu, the 70 bulls, and the equalizer of rich and poor in the same so-called substandard environment. Now, why is it important to note that Sukkos is about Achdus? Because once again, if Sukkos is a re-experiencing of the Anane HaKavod, as the Mabit said, and the Anane HaKavod came in the merit of Aaron, and that's why when Aaron died, we lost the Anane HaKavod, What was the unique and special merit of Aaron? So Pirkei Avos says the merit of Aaron was he was Ohev Shalom Verodev Shalom. He was a lover of peace, a pursuer of peace. Aaron was a person who fostered achdus and unity and love between people. In that way, he was more beloved than even Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu died, it says the Jewish people cried. When Aaron died, it mentions Vayipku Oso, call Beis Yisrael. Everybody cried, men, women, children. Because Aaron was a person who, if there was a machlokas, a fight between a husband and a wife, you would go over to the husband and say, oh, your wife says she's so sorry. Even though she didn't say that, go over to the wife. Your husband says he's so sorry. And they would come together. So if the Anonei HaKavod comes only in the merit of Aaron HaKohen, then we can be zeiche to re-experience the Anonei HaKavod only if we emulate within our own lives the Mida of Aaron HaKohen, which is Ohev Shalom, the Avrodev Shalom, the Achdos, and the Avas Yisrael. Okay, so there's a very good kesher. If Sukkos is Keneged Anonei HaKavod, we understand why on Sukkos there was such an emphasis on Achdos, because Anonei HaKavod comes in the merit of Aaron, who brings Achdos. Okay, now back to the main idea, though. What Sukkos commemorates is actually a machlokes of Tanoim. It is Rabbi Eliezer that says Anonei HaKavod. It is Rabbi Akiva that says the hut. Now, here's the problem. Normally, when you have a machlokas, Rabbi Akiva and any other of the sages, the rule is very clear that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. Right? This is a well-known klal in the Gemara. Halacha ki Rabbi Akiva mechavero. The halacha is like Rabbi Akiva over any other sage. That would indicate that if there's a machlokas, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, if the sukkah is keneged the Anonei HaKavod, or the sukkah is Sukkos Mamish, and Rabbi Akiva is the one that says Sukkos Mamish, we ought to paskin like Rabbi Akiva. And yet, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, you will see Beferish, that the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Sukkah says, the sukkah is keneged the Anonei HaKavod. So the Mefarshim do ask Akasha, why does the Shulchan Aruch paskin like Rabbi Eliezer keneged Rabbi Akiva? Now one answer is that there actually is a girsa change, meaning to say in some girsaot, in some nuschaot, there is actually a flipping of the Mandi Amrim in which it is Rabbi Akiva that says that it's Sukkos Anonei HaKavod, and Rabbi Eliezer that says it's Sukkos Mamish, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rabbi Akiva based on the flipping over of the text. Now, there is a problem, but I'll tell you the problem. That is, there's an interesting vort from the Hafla. Hafla is one of the great Achronim. And the Hafla says, is there a practical nafgamina between Sukkos Mamish and Anonei HaKavod? And the Hafla wants to say there is a nafgamina, and that is, there actually is an opinion that says in the Gemara that halachically you can only use one sukkah for all of the 7 days, meaning according to one opinion, you cannot go to anybody's house for a sukkah meal. You have to use the same sukkah for 7 days. There's another Mandi Amar that we paskin like that says you can go from sukkah to sukkah to sukkah to sukkah. Obviously, that's how we follow. Now, the Hafla wants to say that this is toloi on whether the sukkah is because of the hut or the sukkah is because of the Anonei HaKavod. Because the Anonei HaKavod were the same Anonei HaKavod that followed us from place to place to place. So if the sukkah is connected to the Anonei HaKavod, you have to use the same sukkah, just as we had the same Anane HaKavei. But if the sukkah is because of the temporary structure that we built, well, we didn't carry that with us. If we built a hut out of whatever stray vegetation was around, when it was time to leave, we would abandon it and we would build a new hut later. So there is a problem here, really, if you think about it. According to the Hafla, we have a contradiction. You're telling me we paskin Anane HaKavod, and yet we also paskin, you can go from one sukkah to another sukkah, even though the Hafla said, according to that Mandiyomer, you couldn't. So the Hafla's connection of the Agadic Machlokas, whether it's Anane HaKavod or Sukkos Mamish, to the halachic question of Yaitzen Misukkah L'Sukkah is contradicted by the halacha itself, because the halacha paskins keneged Anane HaKavod, and yet we also paskin Yaitzen Misukkah L'Sukkah. So that's a bit of a tzorichi on that ha'orah. One final point about this idea, and that is, the Shulchan Aruch says, not only is the sukkah keneged Anane HaKavod, but you have to consciously be aware of this, meaning to say, when you sit in the sukkah, you have to directly acknowledge to yourself, you don't have to say it, of course you should share it with your family, that the sukkah represents the Anane HaKavod that Hashem surrounds me with. And here too, the Mefarshim ask the kasha, that where do we find that you're mechuyev to have this specific kavana when you do a mitzvah? For example, let's take matzah. We eat matzah both to commemorate the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate as slaves in Egypt, and the bread of redemption, because we left Mitzrayim in such a hurry, we didn't have time to let our dough rise. And indeed, we talk about that in the Haggadah. But let's say a person didn't know any of this. And a person eats matzah the night of Pesach because there's a mitzvah to eat matzah, but he doesn't know why. Is he yaitzei the mitzvah even though he doesn't know the reason for the mitzvah? The answer is yes. You are yaitzei a mitzvah even if you're not aware of the reason. And yet by sukkah, the Shulchan Aruch implies, if you don't connect the sukkah to the Anane HaKavod, you're not yaitzei at all. And the question is, where else do we find that my ignorance of a reason takes away the mitzvah lagamri? Why is it different than the mitzvah of matzah? And the answer is very, very good. Because by sukkah, there's an unusual special language. It says, Laman yedu dorosechem, ki basukos hoshafti yisbnei Yisrael. That the purpose of this mitzvah is that your generations shall know that God took us out with sukkos, which is interpreted to mean Anane HaKavod. Which means the mitzvah is connected not just to an external observance. The mitzvah is connected to das, to conscious awareness and knowledge. And that is why the kavana of Anane HaKavod is le'ikuva. It actually holds a person back. A person does not fulfill the mitzvah unless they have that particular state of mind. Okay, now, let me go a little further with this and share with you a very, very interesting thought of the Vilna Gaon. There is a famous question that the Rishonim ask, and again, I'm sure you've heard this question, and that is, whether sukkah is because of a hut, or whether sukkah is because of Anane HaKavod. Both of those things existed as soon as we left Mitzrayim. So why do we celebrate Sukkos in the fall after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we ought to celebrate Sukkos at the time that we left Mitzrayim. Now, that would be interesting. That would mean, in other words, essentially, Sukkos and Pesach might be combined. Maybe that would make B'dikas Chametz easier. You'd live in your Sukkah for 7 days. On the other hand, it would be a little hard to make Pesach, or maybe just have a holiday between Pesach and Shavuos and call it Sukkos. Why is Sukkos this time of year? What does that have to do with the Ananei HaKavod or the Hut? So the Vilna Gaon, in his Perush to Shir HaShirim, gives a very interesting answer. Now, this only explains the answer of for Ananei HaKavod. He says the following. The Ananei HaKavod for Sukkos that we are commemorating are not the Ananei HaKavod when we left Mitzrayim, but these are Ananei HaKavod that we got later. How is that so? Because we were given Ananei HaKavod, again, in the merit of Aaron, as soon as we left Mitzrayim. That's true. But as a result of the Chet HaEgel, we lost those Ananei HaKavod. We no longer deserve the Ananei HaKavod. And Hashem wanted to destroy Am Yisrael, or at least abrogate the covenant that he made with us. And Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven and do tshuva and cause Am Yisrael to do tshuva. And finally, the Chet HaEgel was forgiven on the day that Moshe Rabbeinu came down with two tablets of stone, the Luchais, and that was on yesterday, that was Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur was the day of the forgiveness of the Chet HaEgel, when Moshe Rabbeinu brought down the Shtei Luchais. And what day was that? That was the day of the 10th of Tishrei. And on the 11th of Tishrei, Moshe gathered the people. And he told them to start giving gold and silver and tehillot for the construction of a Mishkan, a dwelling place for the Shekhinah, to show that God has forgiven us. He called them on the 11th. And on the 12th and the 13th, people were giving, right? So the 11th was the convocation, the meeting. The 12th and the 13th were the contributions. On the 14th of Tishrei, Moshe Rabbeinu made an accounting that everything was there that needed to be there. And on the 15th, the Ananei HaKavod returned to Am Yisrael. So says the Vilna Gaon in Shir HaShirim, we are not commemorating the Ananei HaKavod that God gave us as a result of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We are commemorating the Ananei HaKavod that God gave us as a result of the tshuva of Yom Kippur and the forgiveness of the Chet HaEgel. This is a big chiddush, because even though the Torah says, I gave you Sukkos when I took you out of Mitzrayim, the Vilna Gaon says that must be understood in a little bit of a lav dafka. It's not referring to the actual Exodus, but shortly after Yetzias Mitzrayim, but only after the Chet HaEgel and the forgiveness of the Chet HaEgel and the construction, not the construction, but the collection and the accounting of the Melachas HaMishkan. Which means, according to this understanding, according to the Vilna Gaon's understanding, Sukkos is Mekushar to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. In fact, in modern Hebrew, we often call them Chagei Tishrei, the holidays of Tishrei. Now, that is the answer of the Vilna Gaon, why we make Sukkos in the fall, because it is not commemorating a Yetzias Mitzrayim event. It is commemorating a post-Yom Kippur event. That's the answer according to the understanding that Sukkos is Keneged Anonei HaKavod. But what about the other interpretation, that Sukkos is the hut of the desert? Why would that be in the fall? We're back to the same question. We should make it when we left Mitzrayim. So on this, we have an answer of the Rashbam on Chumash, Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir. And Rabbi Shmuel, and of course he was Rashi's grandson. Remember, Rashi had no sons. Rashi had daughters. And one of Rashi's sons-in-law was Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir had two very, very famous sons. The oldest was Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir, who is known as Rashbam. And the younger is even more famous. It is Rabbi Yaakov ben Meir, who is known as Rabbeinu Tam. Tam is a play on words because Yaakov is called Ish Tam, a perfect person, a dweller of tents. And Rabbi Yaakov's name was Yaakov, so he was known as Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam is considered to be the greatest of the Balei HaTaisvas. But I'm going to quote now from the Rashbam. Now, it's interesting. The Rashbam wrote a Perush on the Torah. And the Rashbam also wrote commentaries on the Gemara. Not we don't have it on so many Masechtos, but we have it on most of Bava Basra, and we have it on the 10th Perek of Psachim. And it's so interesting that, just to digress for a moment, that the Rashbam has a totally different style in his Gemara commentaries and in his Chumash commentaries. In the Gemara commentaries, he's very, very marach. Compared to Rashi, who's so brief and concise, the Rashbam goes on and on and on and on. In Chumash, he is very makatzer, and he is very pshat-oriented. He will never bring in midrashim. And in fact, in a famous passage, he's actually critical of his grandfather, Rashi, for bringing in too many midrashim, and he says he had a discussion with his grandfather about this point. And Rashi actually said, if he would have the time to write a new commentary, he would write a new commentary that didn't incorporate so many midrashim. Now, whether Rashi actually meant that, or Rashi only said it to get his anakel off his back, I don't know. But the Rashbam style is very different. Now, in Chumash, the Rashbam says the following idea. The notion of making a holiday about living in the hut is specifically connected not to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, but is connected to the ingathering of the harvest season. Because remember in Eretz Yisrael, the way things work. The grain begins to ripen, Pesach time. The grain is actually harvested around Shavuos time. But the produce is then left in the field over the hot summer. So all of the moisture will be dried out. And then around Sukkot, not on Yom Tov, of course, but around Sukkot is the ingathering. That's why Sukkot is called Chag Ha'asif. Shavuot is Chag HaKatzir. Eid Pesach is Chag Ha'aviv, the initial ripening of the barley. Shavuos is Chag HaKatzir, the harvesting. Sukkos is like Thanksgiving, and that is Chag HaAsif, the ingathering. Now, during the ingathering, the Rashbam says, people are often arrogant. They see what they've produced. They are likely to attribute their success to themselves. They will say, Kochi v'yotzim yadi, it is my strength and my ability. Also lias kol ha'chayel hazeh. So as a result, a person is arrogant, a person is prideful, a person has hubris. So what the Torah says is, precisely at the time when you're sitting pretty, When you think you have power, you think you have control, you think you have wealth, you think you have all that you need for the coming year, leave the comfort of your home. Recognize your vulnerability, your precariousness. Expose yourself to the elements. Dwell in the same hut as the poor, impoverished person who does not have such a great harvest. And that will give you humility. That will give you a sense of dependence on Hashem. That will give you empathy and compassion for the downtrodden, because you are sharing that experience. So look at these two different perspectives. The Gra connects the Anane HaKavite to the loving presence of God as reflected to the Anane HaKavite we get after Tshuva. So really, this goes back to the Machlokas in the Gemara itself. In other words, these are two faces of Sukkah. According to the Anane HaKavite idea, I'm in the Sukkah to feel God's love and protection. According to the hut idea, I'm in the Sukkah to feel vulnerability and exposure and precariousness and weakness as an antidote to my arrogance. Now, this can explain a very, very interesting dichotomy in the Chumash itself. If you look in Parshas Emor, which is the Parsha Tamoados, right? That is the Parsha of all the Yomim Tovim. So it goes through all of the holidays. It goes through Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos, and then after Sukkos, it seems to end, Eila Moedei Hashem, these are the holidays of God. And after it has that concluding verse, it then goes back and talks about Sukkos again. In other words, Sukkos is bifurcated, meaning, right, Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos, break, Eilam Odei Hashem, then we continue with Sukkos again. Very, very odd why Sukkos is split in the middle. It's as if the holiday cycle ends, and then you talk about Sukkos again. But the answer is, I'll peep shot. A very, very excellent answer. The answer I'll peep shot is that Sukkos is part of two different holiday cycles. It is part of a long cycle of the Shalosh Regalim, the pilgrimage festival. Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. And we know that Sukkos is connected to pilgrimage festivals because just as there's a chiyuv to be Eila Regal for Pesach and Shavuos, there is such a chiyuv on Sukkos, right? Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you didn't have to go to the Beis HaMikdash. But Sukkos is also part of a smaller holiday cycle, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos. So the way it works is this. The Torah starts off describing a big cycle. Pesach, Shavuos, the whole cycle. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos. That's a little cycle within the big cycle. Meaning Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos is a small unit. And then it says, Eila Moedei Hashem. That's the end of the small unit. But then it says Sukkos again because Sukkos is the conclusion of the larger unit. So Sukkos is Mekushar to two different holiday cycles. Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. And the Chagei Tishrei of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Sukkos. I would suggest to you that the connection of Sukkos to these two holiday cycles is actually the dispute in the Gemara and the Vilna Gaon and the Rashbam. Because with respect to the Shalosh Regalim are very much connected to the agricultural cycle, although we tend to de-emphasize that today. But in the Torah, the agricultural cycle is very significant. Pesach is Aviv, ripening. Shavuos is Kotzir. Sukkos is Osif, ingathering. So when we think of Sukkos in connection to the Sholosh Regalim, we're thinking about it as a harvest festival. And when we think about it as a harvest festival, we have the Rashbam's point that in the time of harvest, a person is arrogant and proud and not thinking of others and selfish. And therefore, we go into the sukkah to experience the huts, vulnerability, precariousness, poverty, the fact that we need Hashem, we're so needy and weak, and we don't have the pride of our comfortable home. So the Rashbam's idea is connected to the hut, and the hut idea is connected to the cycle of the Chagei Tishrei. But when we look at Chagei Tishrei, the hut is connected to the Shalosh Regalim. I'm sorry, the hut idea is connected to the Shalosh Regalim. Okay, so the Shalosh Regalim cycle looks at Sukkos as a harvest festival and looks at Sukkah as the hut, and it takes the Rashbam's idea of vulnerability, precariousness, and weakness to counteract the arrogance that we would have during harvest of Kochi v'yotzim yadi. That's the relationship of Sukkos to the Shalosh Regalim. But when we look at the other cycle, Chagei Tishrei, then we look at Sukkos as the Vilna Gaon looks at it, as the culmination of Yom Kippur when God gave us back the Anani HaKavai as a result of Tshuva. And then we focus on the Anani HaKavai, we focus on the power of Tshuva, we focus on embrace, on divine love, that I don't sit in the Sukkah to be aware of my weakness, I sit in the Sukkah to be aware of the divine love that is surrounding. So Sukkah as hut, connected to harvest, Shalosh Regalim. Sukkah as Anane HaKavayt, connected to Chagei Tishrei, the aftermath of Yom Kippur and Tshuva, as explained by the Vilna Gaon. So what emerges from all of this is that the machlokes in the Gemara, if Sukkah is keneged the Anani HaKavayt or keneged Sukkos Mamish, is not really a machlokes. It represents two perspectives, both of which are correct, and it's paradigmatic of the teaching of Chazal that Elu v'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim, that both of these are the words of the living God. They are both emes. But now I want to make a further connection, really a final connection. That is, not only are they both true, but thematically, they are also connected. You cannot come to the sukkah of the Anane HaKavayt until you experience the sukkah of the precarious hut. Because here is the idea. When my heart is filled with arrogance and gaiva, when I think I'm in control, when I think, as the Torah says, Vayishman Yeshurin, as Klal Yisrael gets fat and prosperous, Vayivat, they reject God, it is not possible for me to experience the loving embrace of Hashem. Because when I am filled with ego and arrogance and hubris, there is no room to feel the embrace of the divine. So as a result, intellectually and emotionally, I must first realize my impotence, my weakness, my vulnerability, my exposure. I leave my comfortable home and I put myself, I expose myself to the elements. to the cold, to the bugs, whatever it would be. I don't have my creature comforts. And then when I realize how weak and dependent I am, instead of that making me depressed, it's the other way around. I can now feel the loving presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, the idea that the sukkah is the hut and the sukkah is the cloud of glory are really two sides of the same coin. It is the obliteration of ego that ultimately enables a person to feel the loving presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And let me mention as well that only when there's no ego can there be gratitude. Because when a person has ego and gaiva, then he feels that everything is coming to him, magiyali. And if things are not perfect, and things are not to my satisfaction, then my attitude is going to be very, very negative. But if I realize that I am totally dependent on the chesed of Hashem, then everything Hashem gives me is more than I deserve. And when there is gratitude, there can be simcha. And then you feel the loving presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so these things are all connected. And of course, let me mention as well, as I said before, that when you experience the symbolic poverty of the sukkah, that gives you empathy for those who are less fortunate. And that too will connect you to Hashem, because Hashem is the one who loves the poor. And therefore, when you emulate Hashem's ways, you are closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the point here that is so significant is that these two different faces of sukkah actually converge and become one. And this is a beautiful example of Elo v'Elo, Divrei Elokim Chayim, that both of them reflect certain fundamental aspects of truth, and they both take you to the same place. That from an awareness of my precariousness and vulnerability, I have gratitude to Hashem, I have humility, and that allows me to feel the loving presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I've mentioned before, I think, the story about the Brisker Rav, that when the Brisker Rav was in the Warsaw Ghetto, and Baruch Hashem, he was miraculously smuggled out. So he seemed to be in very, very good spirits. He gave shiurim. He was not overly nervous, even though every day people were dying either from the Nazis or from disease or from starvation or even from the bombs of the Allies. And the Brisker Rav normally had somewhat of a nervous temperament. He was always worried about many, many things. But in the Warsaw Ghetto, he seemed to be unnaturally calm. And somebody had the chutzpah, the nerve, to actually ask him, you know, Rebbe, you're so nervous all the time. How can you be calm at a time like this? And the Brisker Rav answered, I'm nervous when something is my responsibility. When it comes to doing mitzvahs, that is my job. Hakol bidei shemayim, everything is in the hands of heaven. Chutz miyira shemayim, accept the decision to fear God. So mitzvahs are up to me. When it's up to me, I know that I'm prone to failure. But what happens if you're in a, so I'm nervous. What happens if you're in a situation where there's literally nothing you can do? You're helpless. So many people will go crazy. Many people will be despondent. The Brisker Rav said, it's precisely in that situation, when I recognize how helpless I am, that I'm actually calm, because now I know it's up to God. Now, the Brisker Rav was not naive. He understood there was a World War II going on. There was a Holocaust. He lost his wife. He lost children. He was not oblivious to the tragedies of life, some of which he suffered himself. But he understood that when he gets rid of his sense of control, his sense of power, and he puts it in God, that could give a person great serenity and great joy. In a sense, the sukkah is representing our powerlessness and our vulnerability. But that in turn becomes the source of great simcha and joy. In some sense, the whole experience that we've gone through and we are going through with COVID-19, the coronavirus, is kind of the very, very same lesson. You know, modern man can become very prideful. There are so many things that we control. And yet this virus has shown us that our world could fall apart very, very quickly. Whether it's the pandemic, the sicknesses, the deaths, whether it's the lockdown, the economic dislocations, the loss of employment, the loneliness, the closing down of synagogues and schools. Everybody's life, even if Baruch Hashem, they've been spared any effects of the sickness. But everybody's life has been turned around. And one of the main lessons here is that we're not in control. And although that can be a source of great, great anxiety, it could also give us the ability to let go a little bit and see where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking us on this exciting but unknown journey. So I want to wish everybody again a Gemar Tov and a Shana Tova Metuka, a Chag Sameach. Sukkot, of course, is called for the reasons that we discussed. Zaman Simchaseinu. All the Yomim Tovim, there's a mitzvah of Simcha, but Sukkot, Simcha is the biggest thing. May our sukkahs be a zman simchaseinu, and may it be the precursor for a year of much, much bracha, yeshua, geula, and good health. So be well, and again, thank you for coming. Kol tov.